Good evening. Welcome to In the Metal. Thank you very much for joining us for another adventure through the wonderland that is independent watchmaking and all of the facets that are associated with this pretty amazing world of creativity and innovation and craftsmanship. Tonight we have a slightly different format because in my wisdom I forgot about an important date that was happening in the United States today, which is a thing called Thanksgiving. And although I wasn't reminded about it, I certainly didn't remember it myself. And so tonight, for the time being at least, we are doing this myself and my guest. And so instead of having a witty entree, I will just get straight down to the bones of the matter and introduce you to our guest tonight. Our guest tonight is a guy who his work literally illuminates the world of independent watchmaking. He takes his work so seriously that he moved himself to the darkest city in the world so he could experiment with his luminous sorcery. He is a man who literally has fire emitting from his fingertips, and everything he touches turns to an explosion of fluorescent neon color. And he is one in-demand guy in the watch industry. And so without further ado, I am going across to Gothenburg in Sweden to, he's not in his den tonight, but he is known as the Black Badger. And welcome, Mr. James Thompson. How the hell are you?
I have absolutely nothing to add after that interview. I'm going to bed. That was perfect. I'll see you later.
It was it was good having you on, man. And
God, you make it sound like I'm going to be hosting Saturday Night Live or something.
I don't know. There's John from Helsinki is going, good evening. We have Black Friday from October to March. Very good. That's very suited for tonight. And
Amsterdam. Oh, what? Beautiful.
I can never remember Amsterdam. So I hear it's a beautiful city, but you know, it's funny thing. Hey, Miguel, good evening. Thank you for joining us.
How are you, pal?
So here, what normally happens here, James, is that I do a little bit of introducing at the beginning, and because I'm very shy, retiring, and the kind of guy who sits in the background.
Gogfell, Patrick.
Shana. Oh, man, there's somebody I know. Somebody I know is watching. Old Crikey. Des, thanks a million, my man. I got it all from you all those nights sitting on the high stool. That's where I got this. So we are looking forward to having a little bit of a chat with this great guy tonight. Normally, as I say, we're joined with, we always have my other half, my partner in time, Mr. Dan Smith.
That's good.
Yeah. And but tonight, as I say, we in a flurry of emails last night, we were going across and going, I've booked this thing. We've got the Black Badger, who is the most in demand. Are you the most in demand man in the watch game this week, for example?
Yes.
You are. So we've got the Black Badger all lined up to go and talk to us. And we are, so I ended up saying to Dan, right, we've got all our promotions done, we've scheduled the thing, people are expecting us, there's people putting off going out tonight, there's people saying, no, scratch the cinema, scratch the restaurant.
We're saving lives. We're literally saving lives by people staying home.
I can remember one day saying to a guy, and I used to work in the beer trade, and I said to a guy of this wonderful beer I was selling, hey, cheers. And I says, you know, this beer is so good. It's got low sugar, low calories, so it'll help me live longer. And his reply was, who the fuck wants to live longer around here, man? And I'm like, that's...
it's like something Johnny Cash would say or something.
That's kind of an end of that conversation. So here we are. It is myself. You're going to have to put up without the brilliant repartee of Dan Spitz. Of course, Dan does have a key. He can come in anytime he wants, if he fancies, but we understand that he can't...
And it's a little extra confusing as well.
How did I mess that up?
I completely forgot it was Thanksgiving, because Thanksgiving in Canada is like end of October. I'm looking over to ask my wife, who's Swedish, when Thanksgiving in Canada is, and I'm wearing a friggin' Canada shirt. Like, how
you sure are.
Stupid am I? No, like all the tier two sort of minor holidays, they're at different times in Canada as they are in Sweden. So like Father's Day is at a different time of the year, or Mother's Day or Thanksgiving and all this kind of stuff. So I kind of get off the hook for forgetting Father's Day and Mother's Day, even though I've been living here for 20 years. It's a nice little country. I don't really know why we have Thanksgiving in Canada. I mean, I think it's more of a celebrating the winter fall harvest, I guess.
Hey, we all got to be thankful.
My friend's dad would joke that we're thankful that we're, as Canada, sandwiched in between Russia and the U.S.
That's you lucky guys, honest to goodness. Like, you know,
it was funnier in the mid-80s. Yeah.
You're big brothers either side. You're safe as hell. So yeah, you're originally from Canada, so you've gone and relocated to, as I said at the start, the darkest place you could find on planet Earth.
I moved from the rainiest city in North America, Vancouver, to pretty much one of the rainiest cities in Europe, Gothenburg, Sweden. And I just get so jealous every time I turn on Instagram. You know, I do a bunch of rings with a friend of mine who lives in Cape Town, South Africa. And when it's winter here, it's like 38 degrees and sunny, and he's golfing or at a wine farm or something. And I'm just suffering like a maniac around here. No, it's not.
Welcome along to In the Metal. This is a little thing we could start with. It began in April. We ran it as a bit of a trial to see if we liked each other and if we could do it. And by the hokey, it turned out to be a good thing. And we've been able to attract somehow or other some of the best names in the whole world of independent watchmaking. And so that continues, James, because we've got yourself.
And I was here to fill in on the holiday.
So here, tell me this. What do you do?
What?
I told you I wouldn't ask you questions that other people ever asked before.
It's kind of the dumbest thing, because it absolutely depends who asks me, how I respond to the who are you and what do you do question. I do kind of tailor that response a little bit. I mean, if it's somebody that I've never met before, I design, industrial design. If it's somebody kind of more my age, I would say, I work in watches and jewelry and sort of weird advanced materials and all that. Oh, okay, cool. And if it's, you know, usually when it's somebody kind of kind of like my parents' age, then you have to just sort of say, oh, it's kind of like where art meets engineering. You have to sort of smarten up the answers. Because if you just say to the average, you know, oh, I work on gazillion dollar watches, people just go, you're an idiot. A little bit. Yeah, if you had said to somebody, hey, I worked on the new Lamborghini. I'm like, oh, that's fantastic. Whoa, you say, oh, I just worked on a $100,000 watch. And they're like, you suck. The world doesn't need that.
I can emphasize with you, and I can relate to that, because, you know, I've been working in this watch industry for about 16 years, going on 17 years now. Incredibly. If I tell that to herself, she'll be going, the hell? Why aren't you a millionaire? And I'll say, oh, well, you know, maybe I would have been if I'd have stuck at my old job, you know, but this is much more fun.
Yeah.
I actually met a relative today.
Actually, you know what? That's a really important point, though, is exactly what you said, that you know, if I was in it for the money, I would have done it a lot differently. And I am 1,000% the same, you know, like even just the fact that I, what I did at work today, you know, I was getting my hands dirty and grunting and yelling and swearing and throwing tools around and, you know, not exactly what you would associate with nice, you know, delicate, elegant watches. I was chucking wrenches around and yelling and swearing and banging on machines. And
I would expect nothing less.
It was great. And I've kind of adopted that niche as my own. I mean, I don't just sit at a, you know, nice new Mac like this and just program stuff and then email those files off for engineering people to make. I quite like getting involved and making stuff.
Getting stuff in your skin and things you got.
I was milling some new military spec magnesium alloy today on something. And as I'm doing it, I'm sort of like rereading the emails from the manufacturer and they're like, this stuff will explode. Uh-oh.
If you mill it, it's going to go off in your face.
They're like, take your time. And if it explodes, yeah, you put water on, it'll explode again. Just, you know, and you'll die. Yeah.
Brilliant. Well, listen,
so that's not the traditional kind of watch trajectory, but I just really dig it. I just really enjoy it.
Cool. Well, listen, I was just going to introduce you a little bit to people who aren't familiar with this man, with James Thompson, better known in the trade as Black Badger, works out of the Badger's Den in Gothenburg.
James
to you and me. This is a kind of an idea of what James does, right? James is an absolute master of luminescence. Would that be correct to say, James? Yeah. And
it depends who's listening.
Well, in this environment, right? We'll
say, yes.
So this actually is an image of a handful of your rings, because you, like, probably your day job is manufacturing these extraordinary pieces of jewelry, these rings, and because I can remember the first time that I ever met you was at the Salon QP back in 2013. I think we were talking about this yesterday, James, and I think it was 2013. So this was you opened this box, and in it were these crazy rings sitting in a foam.
One of those sort of pelican cases.
Pelican cases, yeah.
I never put in my suitcase. So I'm always walking through the airport wherever I go with this. I mean, the only thing you describe it as, if you're trying to, like, you know, some kind of secret agent and you want to have like a sniper rifle or like some suppressed James Bond machine gun, this is what you would carry it in.
So you looked like a secret agent that day, James, if I can remember, if you're tweed, like, and a nice hat and
slightly older, fatter one. Yeah.
I was thinking more maybe Frederick Forsyth's Jackal.
Well played.
You're blending in with the scenery there, my man.
Every time I've gone to QP, it's like it's the one little period of the year where I'd actually get to dress like an adult. Because when I'm making those rings and stuff in the machine shop, I'm just getting dirty and messy and covered in junk. So I go to QP and it's like I get out the only nice clothes that I have. And it worked out that I had been shopping a few months previous with our friend Simon Cudd, who we were talking about before, who introduced me to all things tweed. So I just went ape shit on tweed. And I had a shirt and a tie and a tweed like waistcoat vest and then a tweed jacket over top. Looked awesome. And I'd take two steps into the Saatchi Gallery, and you just get that first little bead of sweat because it was 150 degrees in there. And I've never been so thermally uncomfortable in my entire life. You could actually hear me sweating, this kind of. And I think this was actually the first time I met David Toon. And I was like trying on one of their watches. I think it was that Black Knight. DB28 Black Knight, mm-hmm. The black Zerk one. And I'm looking at it like this, and it's the first time I've tried on a watch this expensive. It's $100,000+. And just as I'm looking at it, just this big disgusting bead of sweat just rolls right off my nose and kind of boink. You try and discreetly sort of wipe it off on the edge of your shirt or something.
I think we all have stories like that, you know, where we've done something and just got the wonderful Adam Grenoots is watching and in the best seat in the house. Happy Thanksgiving to you, man. And
is he making room for his dinner, or is he clearing out the basement a little bit?
You know, let us not prompt any more answers to that one.
Yeah.
And Adam, we're not posting any more of your comments. Man.
Put that guy in a box.
Get off this.
No, the day-to-day work is definitely more the rings. And I've gone through so many. Hey, buddy, Adam, get off the stage. So many different sort of generations and manifestations of different kinds of materials. I mean, I think when we first met, it was the quite sort of chunky post and beam kind of construction where it was a lot of, you know, big chunks of solid carbon fiber. It was when I first started using this AGT Ultra glow material, which was a solid block of a super luminova type material. And you could mill rings out of them. They were cool. But it did sort of lend itself to a fairly chunky, you know, sort of DDR aesthetic on things. And I've sort of gone through about three different generations of the material now. And like with the rings that you were just showing there, I'm actually working in daily contact with Superluminova in Switzerland. And we're kind of constantly chasing each other a little bit because it's going to sound really dumb to say it. I'm sort of trying to get them to do more and more in different materials. And they kind of use me as a bit of an informal skunk works because they can try something new and literally, you know, take it out of the oven and say, try it, because, you know, who the hell knows who I am? You can't do that with Rolex. You know, these guys are doing the loom of like 98% of the Swiss watch industry. So all these other bigger companies have such a production chain to go through that it takes a long time. Whereas me, just FedEx it over and I'll try a few things. And if it explodes or catches fire, well, don't do that again. But realistically, what that does is it lets me stay months ahead of the major brands. Mm. So it's quite cool for a little one-man army like myself to be getting material 4, 5, 6 months before, well, Rolex or Hublot or Tissot or all these sort of big brands.
I actually think that, you know, small companies are able to react. It's that analogy of, it's easier turning around a super tanker. It's big corporations take forever. I've also said many times, people are going to start telling me, stop repeating myself. I like that sound. And
it's been a long day.
But a lot of these things would never get off the design process in big companies. They just would not. It would be looked at and go, nope, that's too out there. It's too.
Well, and a lot of them are just terrible ideas. But it depends entirely on the context of something. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, using the early stuff, the early sort of first generation agile development. Yeah, I like that. Part of the problem, part of what makes me grunt and swear and sit here and drink beers is I kind of position myself off the edge of the map, which everyone does from time to time, but going out of your way to stay off the edge of the map is a dump load of work. And it's terrifying because every single thing that I'm doing, 90% of the things that I'm doing, there is no instruction manual. You know, like I was speaking to a friend of mine a few days ago, who's a goldsmith, silversmith. She's spectacularly good. But if you need to know how to do something in gold, there's 3,000, 4,000 years of experience in, and you melt gold and make something nice. If you want to, you know, I'm thinking back to some of the sort of goofy projects I've been doing the last year. How do you make a watch dial out of coffee? Don't know. Go find out.
We will talk about that. I will tell you.
not too much on the coffee dial. But yeah. Go easy on that.
But, so I'm going to take you right back to the first time I met you, right? So we were in London, Salon QP, which was, for me, one of the absolute best shows of the lot. It just was so intimate. I loved it. And so I lament its passing and why it didn't work.
Me too. I really liked it because every project that I did up until like this year, every single project I did, I met that contact off Pietro. I met that contact at Salon QP, whether it's Seven Friday or Schofield or Max from MBNF or the Iceman himself, Stefan Sarpaneva. I met all these people 6 or 7 beers into the night at something like QP. I've never had to email. I mean, maybe it shows in my work that I don't have a portfolio or a resume or any kind of official stuff. I've never had to cold call. Send an email to pick whatever watch brand, you know, Breitling, and say, "Hi, I'm James. I'd like to do." No, it's after a dump load of free drinks. You end up in the pub later, and the little goofy flashlight comes out of your pocket, and you just start taking these goofy rings or watches out of your bag, and you kind of just start the conversation there. I think that's a lot more contemporary way of working. I try and tell this to my dad. And he's just like, "So you're an idiot. You went and got drunk at the pub." Like, well, yeah, but I was working.
I got business out of it.
I was business drinking. Come on.
Yeah.
But I mean, even that, I mean, even like our friend Adam, who was just commenting there, I've known of him for years, longest time. And I finally met him at SIHH last year. I think I was wearing this shirt actually. And our first conversation was, "Hey, nice to meet you. Let's go get some free beers from Chopard or whoever it was." And it's a very giveaway.
We go over to these shows and we gotta work our asses off, like James. You know, you can't be saying that we go drinking, man. God's sake, like
I do. Limp home from Basel.
Broke but the reason I brought up that first encounter with you was because for me, the first time I saw your work for Giles Ellis, the most amazing Giles Ellis, what a speaker. I used to go there and listen to his seminars, and you talk about the fundamentals of design, he was on top of that there's a reason for everything in his watches. So this was
his design seminars were so good. The what was the terms he had, like the nexus of cool or something, or they were so good. And he's got such a good beard too.
Absolutely. James Ellis, I am writing his name down right now, because he is next on my email list.
thank you for not making me go after him.
Absolutely beautiful. And I remember you took out your pocket. You had a really mega bright little pocket torch. And you darted the dial of this for about 5 or 10 seconds. And the next thing, it was transformed with this absolutely vivid luminescence around the
That's actually interesting, because that watch uses very much we're going back to 2013 or 14, of course, but that uses something called Moon Glow. And Moon Glow, hello, Sophie.
Sophie, thanks for I get it. We'll catch a replay. Have a wonderful Thanksgiving with your family. And guess what? We love you too. Let me tell you, are.
Leave us alone, Sophie. We're working here. So Moon Glow was sort of the first generation of this photoluminescent material. And it was these sheets you would buy of like about 2 millimeters thick. And you would get it from places that made like supplies for custom knife makers. Cause you can make these thin little inserts and it glowed and looked really cool. So that was the first stuff that I used. And it was absolutely perfect for the Schofield Black Lamp. Cause it was a very linear, like I actually made 100 of those bezel rings on my lathe, in my old studio, and it just was a crap load of work. And of course, you're making by hand, by eye, because I didn't have digital readout on this. There's no CNC. These chapter rings, and it needs to be 1.42 millimeters thick. And if it's 1.45 millimeters thick, the watch doesn't close.
Yeah.
So it was
and
I was doing this by hand. I had a little hand sanding jig. It was the same. Actually, that's where I got the idea for the sanding for the dials for the four die watches 10 years later. But I sanded off the end of my fingertips every day to the point that you would just touch them on the sandpaper and it'd be like grip, grip. So I could have been like a jewel thief or something because I had no fingerprints. So that was very much the first generation of this material.
Yeah.
And you were very limited because it was only green and it was only available in this kind of flat panel form. So after doing the Schofield Black Lamp and a bunch of rings and such, you couldn't get it any thicker than about 2.5 to 3 millimeters. So if you wanted something chunky to mill a solid ring out of, you had to laminate layers together. And it just looked crappy. It wasn't good. See, there, that's bloody fantastic.
It's not a great image, but it's a great photograph of absolute class watch.
What I really liked about the black, and you know what, I never get to talk about this watch. Everybody wants to talk about the HMX and such. What I love about the Black Lamp is it's a carbon fiber watch that doesn't care that it's made of carbon fiber. Mm-hmm. Every carbon fiber case now this is like we were talking about earlier, is some kind of NASA test pilot, Navy SEAL, Tom Clancy commando kind of thing.
Yeah.
This is just carbon purely for the aesthetic. Giles said that he got the inspiration from the rock striations and the cliffs in southern Cornwall, if I'm remembering correctly. And I just thought that was the coolest thing ever because, I mean, at the time I was doing piles of work with repurposed Formula One components. So I had a friend in England who was always sending me like busted chunks of Red Bull Formula One cars, and it was all carbon fiber.
Yeah.
And they were so light. But it was crap. Like Formula One parts are only meant to last really one race.
Yes.
So you use the absolute minimum amount of resin to make it not fall apart. So if you're making a ring out of some, it was some component of a Mark Webber's, F1 car or something.
Yeah.
It's fantastic for the car. It's complete shit for the rings. Because as soon as you start cutting across the grain, you can take your thumbnail and just start popping apart the layers. So somebody gives you a bunch of money to make them a luxury wedding band out of a famous F1 part. And I had about an 80% failure ring on them, which was just infuriating. What Giles did was they actually didn't care how lightweight it was, which was going against the holy grail of carbon fiber. They actually added graphite powder into the matrix on it. So it was denser and it was heavier. Who goes out of their way to make carbon fiber heavier? This is when I just fell in love with Schofield because I'm like, my man, that's proper cool. I absolutely love that he went that way with it.
It's funny, it resonated with me too. I love the whole philosophy behind his whole approach to watchmaking. It's all about design. Everything mm-hmm. There's a reason for every little minutia on those watches. That's a great story,
And I was super, super, super pleased when I got asked to fill his design seminar slot at QP about 2016, I think. I was so proud. I was super excited. And the day that I was to do it, like my time was at like 11 o'clock or something, came in at 9 o'clock in the morning and I was exhibiting and a couple of my watches had been stolen out of my exhibit overnight. Thank you, Salon QP Security. So I spent the whole day just running around and freaking out and sort of and talking to security and London police and all this. And it's like, I think it was Timothy Barber who was organizing it. He's like, James, we can cancel it. It's okay. You don't have to do this. And I did the, I'm a professional. I gave the worst seminar in the history of the universe because I was my mind was going 100 miles an hour in the other direction, and a couple of my friends were sitting in the front row, and they're like, they had the best description. They said it's like when you're a teenager and you try and go out and have a couple of beers, and then you come home at like 7 o'clock at night and your parents are still awake and you try and be kind of extra casual. You're like, hey, dad, how you doing, sexy? And you just, it's just, it's such a train wreck. And that was
really
my one and only public speaking experience at Salon QP.
So that wasn't your opinion. That's your friends actually validated that and confirmed that with you. That was
I suck.
Spoiledly, yeah.
I shouldn't have done it in the first place, you know, because I was kind of all over the place. But I don't know.
Did you not do a TED talk?
Yeah,
you did, didn't you? Yeah,
yeah. In Brighton, England, in about 2015 or 16.
Yeah, yeah.
I cried in front of about 1,500 people.
That's putting your heart on the line.
A lot.
Amazing. Actually, the word amazing, the directions that this whole industry takes you in, that you can, that once you get into that world and you start getting a little bit of traction, that...
It was actually really funny because when I got approached to do it, the theme of this TED event was disruption. And they're like, we want you to talk about disrupting design, you know, because you're kind of an outsider and stuff. Mm-hmm. That's not cool. So I put it all together and it just started to seem like I was just bragging about other people's stuff. Here's some cool McLaren cars that I kind of know somebody that, you know, I know a guy that works there. And here's some of Max's cool watches. And here's some of Stepan's cool stuff. And it just seemed like I was just bragging about other people's stuff. So I went back to the beginning and wrote the whole thing again. And it became about the importance and the benefit of being a weird kind of, not outcast little kid, but when I was younger, I had a stutter, a speech impediment, you know, probably as everybody did at some point in their life. And I got really bullied and teased about it a lot. And how much, even at the age of 44 now, that, you know, it's still kind of back there in the cheap seats a little bit. And it affects your personality. Mm-hmm. And I think it wasn't until much later in life that I really found the benefit in that. But to be that brave at 6, 7, 8, 9 years old, walking into your school, knowing that all the kids are going to point and laugh at you because you stutter, but you still go do it every day. That's Viking ballsy. And yeah. once you sort of come to terms with that, getting up and standing in front of 5,000 people and talking, who cares? You know, they're not going to point and laugh at you. And if they do, they're jackasses.
Yeah.
So it was super cathartic, but I didn't expect it to be as emotionally triggering as I did. And I bawled my eyes out in front of, you know, something like 1,200, 1,500 people.
Get away.
The whole time. Oh, I was just ugly crying. Yeah.
Oh, but that's passionate.
but I found my silver bullet. Yeah.
It is. Look here, do you know something, James? Just to put on the same level, I was the same as you. You know, our great buddy, Pietro Tamayor, for the last 2 or 3 years, doing these amazing live broadcasts. And for months and months and months and months, Pietro's go, yeah, can you do one today? And I go, yeah, I'd be freaking. I didn't want to do it. I look at myself on the screen and, you know, I don't see. I don't see Ed Melon or Max Boucher, put it like that. Yeah. And,
I'm in the same boat, pal.
You're not so bad, let me tell you.
Our industry is far too good looking. It's
a bit off putting, all right. Like, you know,
except for Pietro.
Yeah, he's natural Italian.
And Adam Cranios. Not that guy. He's no problem.
but Pietro sort of introduced me to this, and then at the start of before In the Metal took off, or before it started, I had this conversation with Dan on Skype one night in about February, and it was the most fantastic conversation. And at the end of it, I said, well, why did we not record this and put it down somewhere or other? And Dan went, hey man, let's do a podcast, you know. And I was right, that sounds really cool. But then it took about 2 months to actually get me to do one of these here. So I know what you're talking about. But now, this one here tonight is me being brave, because I've never actually fronted one of these things on my own before.
Oh, good man.
So, poison territory, man. And so I just noticed that the numbers, everybody's going out the door there, like, you know, hey, where's Dan, you know?
I was doing an Instagram live with George Bamford. I think it was when we released the Superconductor watch not too long ago. And so there's the one. You know what? Today I had to package that back up and send it back to Bamford, because we just have the one, or I had the one sort of original prototype. And I was going to wear it tonight, but it's all packaged up to be sent back. Okay. Because it's going up for some more photo shoot stuff. But what a cool picture, right? That is such a rad picture.
I see for the last 2 hours, James, I have run around the internet nicking photographs from here, there, and everywhere. I am going to be up in court, let me tell you, where I've stopped shoplifting of photographs. Right. Some people do photoshopping. I do photo shoplifting.
Nice.
God, so, where is this coming from?
So I'm doing this Instagram live thing with George, and he's going to sort of interview me. We're going to talk about the watch. So it starts off, we pop up on George Bamford's or Bamford Watch Department's Instagram live. And right away, there's like 180 people watching. Aces. And George goes, and now we're going to be talking to my friend James Thompson of Black Badger. And I kid you not, we went from 180 to like 40 in like 2 minutes. And I'm just sitting here watching the count, just like, should I get my boobs out or something? Like, oh, man. Oh, so unpopular.
That's a hell of a piece to you, because what's special about that one, James?
Nothing.
I thought so. So moving on.
I'm fired.
What is it made out of, man?
This was really cool. This obviously it's a Zenith El Primero, but yep. What we did was because George is officially sanctioned, I guess is the right term, by the LVMH group, we actually worked with Zenith on manufacturing this. So instead of, like, that's not just a coating or a painting, that the entire main case has been milled from a solid slab of superconductor. So these big, thick superconductor rods, like you would have in this case, it's in a nuclear reactor or in a hydroelectric dam or even like a particle accelerator. It's instead of a power cord, is the really blunt way of putting it, where you have to transmit massive amounts of electrical current. You know, like just a cable plugged into the wall obviously isn't enough for a nuclear reactor. So you have these huge banks of superconductor to transmit the current. And the whole point why it's superconductor is that when it's cooled down to something like minus 230 or something, the electrical resistance of the material drops to zero. So that, from the physics sense, means you could basically put a single current, a single electron in there, and just run around on a loop with no acceleration or power source for a billion years. That has absolutely screw all to do with why we chose it. I chose it because it looks badass. And it looks cool. I've done a bunch of rings out of this superconductor stuff. And it's a long extruded bar, right? So from the front end, it looks like a honeycomb, like you can sort of see in the top of the lugs there. But as soon as you start looking at it from any kind of oblique angles, where you start introducing a curve into it, each of those perfect little hexagons gets kind of elongated. So it starts to look, you know, kind of like crocodile skin or some kind of alien. So we then took it a step further. And once the watch was finished and it was really high polished, it was cool, but it wasn't badger enough. You know, it was a little too pretty. So what I tend to do with my rings is once the ring is finished, you drop it in a specific kind of acid that eats one of the materials, but not the other. So in the case of the watch here, we needed an acid that ate the cupro nickel, which is the main insulator around the inside, but doesn't affect the niobium filaments, which is the gray sort of dragon skin kind of effect.
Yeah.
So basically what you do is you enhance the contrast between the sort of bronzy material and the sort of grayish material on that. So we're actually going out of our way to kind of beat up on the watch a little bit, which is a risk on a, whatever it was, 15,000 pound watch that I'm basically going, we got to make it look shittier. Like take it and bury it in the backyard for a couple of weeks. You know, like we want this to have a bit of a lost in space kind of vibe to it.
It sure has that.
I absolutely love wearing this watch. It is one of the coolest pieces I worked on. It's the first time in the watch industry anyone's made a watch out of superconductor. And a little asterisk beside that is, unless you count the fact that technically aluminum, solid elemental aluminum, is a superconductor. And I think who made the aluminum watch? F.P. Jour maybe did an aluminum watch a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
I don't know. You know, I said something for like Time and Tide Australia saying it's the first superconductor watch. And some guy who was like a quantum physics professor just kind of went, actually, and just beat the ever-loving crap out of me.
There's always one, isn't there?
There's always one. And I basically walked right up to him and tapped him on the shoulder. So wasn't smart of me. No, that piece is absolutely epic.
Yeah.
I'm actually wearing one of the other Bamford collaboration watches here.
Whoa.
In front of the camera. So that
right
is actually the first one that we did. Yeah, see if you can find a picture of that one, and then I'll find you something cool to go with it. So that is a Tag Heuer Carrera caliber 5. And what we did was we actually removed all the indicators and the date window and all that kind of extra garbage from the dial because we wanted the material of the dial really to take center stage. So the dial in this case is made from something called Fordite. And I've actually got a piece of it on my hand here. If you want to pop back. Neener, neener, neener. So this is Fordite.
What an amazing material. Tell us a little bit about that.
It's crap. It's garbage. It's car paint.
It actually is, isn't it?
It's car paint. This is what gathers and accumulates on industrial work surfaces in big industrial car factories. And after you painted like 3,000 or 4,000 or 5,000 cars, the mounting hardware, like if you're painting a door, you don't just stand there and hold the door with your hands while some guy sprays it. Everything's on mounting jigs and it goes through the process. And all the extra hardware gets all the overspray and the spills and all the kind of crap that builds up on it. So after you've painted so many cars, I mean, that is,
it's just, see,
I'm trying to think, yeah, there's a bit of a cleaner edge to it. And each of those little lines is just a perfect, like you look at, I mean, I look at this stuff under a microscope every bloody day with work. It's really, really neat because it's very geological in its structure. And all those little paper thin lines will never, ever intersect because they're deposits. Mm. Very, very cool. So after we did that one.
Yeah.
My buddy who owns the brewery, Beer Bibliothek here in Gothenburg, which is shameless plug. What I'm.
That's I would send them an invoice. That's cool. No problem.
So look at this. All my motion is backwards here. Daryl did the graphics design for the Great Swedish Beer Festival. And what he did was he took a picture of the dial of my Fordite watch. And it actually became, he changed all the colors so it matched the logo. But.
Wow. Yeah. That's good. So whenever you pick up
a free beer out of it. So hey,
whenever you pick up a six pack of your buddy's beer, it's got your watch face on it.
The day that it got released, I was at the beer store over across the street here. And I'm just standing there like 3 o'clock on a Friday, like taking pictures of the can. And some guy walks behind me and is like, geez, you're thirsty. I'm like, no, that's my one. That first Fortnite watch was I would say it almost kind of fundamentally changed the way I approach the way that I work, because I absolutely love having no bloody idea what I'm doing. Thankfully so. We're talking about making a precision watch dial. The actual Fordite is like 0.15 millimeters thick. And it's 40, 50-year-old waste car paint.
Yeah.
Right? So to get from, yeah, exactly, like this. To get from these big-ass thick chunks onto a watch dial, you know, you don't just cut it out with scissors and glue it on. Like, it is a ridiculously precise process. And your substrate you're working with, it's not titanium. It's nothing metallic. It's car paint.
It's paint.
It's paint. And it's not even really, I'm sorry, it's not even really good car paint. We're talking about Ford from like 1982. It kind of sucks. So to actually get these patterns out of it, you know, we had to sort of cook up this whole process. How do you get this into the watch? Have it still be a quality watch that's not going to crap out and fall apart or flake off? And also, how do you make this waste product be of the level of a, you know, fairly expensive timepiece that we're both going to have our names on? And I'm more proud of these 4-day ones than probably a lot of the things that I've done over the last number of years. These, wow, just, you know, sometimes
they are absolutely spectacular.
Sometimes the stars just align, and sometimes shit just works in your favor.
Yeah. Yeah. Everything you ever do always works out. Isn't that right though, James?
That is so true.
Isn't it? Yes.
That's right. Could you call my parents and tell them that?
No way.
Oh, that's... You're such a jackass. That's when you switch to the car.
Oh, man, I selected that. It was totally by accident. Yeah.
Cut back to me for a second. Wait, was that there? Oh,
that was out of focus. You can do that again.
I'm just going to drink my beer. I'd like to be alone.
No, the reason I showed it there is a lot of work went into this here. And the dial is actually, go on, tell us a little bit about it, because it... do not everything is roundy loved, but this was a cool watch for its very own reasons. Yeah. Give us a little bit of the lowdown on that.
The dial is made of coffee. Coffee. This is just one of the weirdest projects. And this is one of those things that made me absolutely fall in love with George Bamford as a person, because he's ape shit crazy, but he is the biggest enabler on the planet. You could any idea you could come up with, He's probably the guy that can get it in the watch and hand it back to you and say, no, it's not right. Keep working on it. And actually get a viable product out of it. I absolutely love this coffee watch, but God, we just got the crap kicked out of us. Because, I just got a message from my mom saying she's watching this now, so I should probably watch my language. Hi, mommy. Love you.
This comes to my idea of my best behavior.
Stop mentioning the cocaine and hookers.
Oh, no. That's it.
This was super fun, because after the 4-day dial, we basically had to come up with a way to get non-watch materials to be successful inside a watch. And we came up with our little Ninja MacGyver method, and we were pretty jazzed about it. And then it kind of became, well, how do you follow up a watch that uses crappy 40-year-old car paint that was chipped off the floor of a factory? So coffee, why not? So I actually went and spent some time with this there's quite a famous coffee shop here here in Gothenburg, a place called Cafe de Mateo, and they're like proper coffee Jedi, you know, like there's a lot of mustache wax in that place, like they're really really sort of into it. And I went and I spent a day or so there with them, and we talked about different kinds of roast, different kinds of grind, all these things that usually you'd be talking about. Like, if you ever see what Peter Chong from Deployant posts on his Facebook page when he's making a coffee, he's like a Zen coffee master. He talks about the percentage and the water ratio and brrr. We were having the same conversation, excuse me, but it was more about color, because we're not going to be drinking this crap. It was about what kind of color, what kind of roast, and what kind of grind is going to give us the best look, the best sort of visual appeal for it. So they actually made a specific roast for me. I got a bag of Black Badger coffee, and they did a grind that was like the average coffee machine goes. There we go. Jesus, you're quick. So we actually had the average espresso grinder, say, has settings of about 1 to 10, 1 being the finest you would ever have. the guy that I was working with, Daniel, was so into this project, he took his own coffee machine at home and like destroyed it and made it so it went down to about a -2 or -3. So this coffee, it was like almost like talcum powder. It was so fine. Mm. And then did a special sort of optically clear resin casting, vacuum, blah, blah. There we go. And then, so that's my super awesome little jig of science that I made for sanding these things. And it was hand done.
So is that, got the resin on?
Excuse me.
Is that gloss, that glossy finish, is that the resin?
Nope, on? That's just water.
Just this water was, at this stage?
This was water and sandpaper. That is all I used to make these. The little jig there is so I would keep, so that I wouldn't keep sanding off my fingertips because blood really soaks into this material well.
Okay.
And the little black lines on this disc, when you're sanding it off, as soon as you start to see one of those lines start to disappear, you know that you've sanded that side enough. So you put a little bit extra pressure on the other side. And this is, I'm eyeballing this to like 3 decimal points of a millimeter. And, you know, it was just fun. It was the most relaxing, you know, Zen type thing I've ever done. And of course it's actual coffee. So as I'm sanding this and I've got all the warm water, you know, so my hands don't get cold when I'm sanding it, I've just got beautiful espresso just like dripping all over my feet and all over the studio to the point that, you know, other people are kind of sticking their head in the door going, oh, geez, can I get a cup of that? And you show what it is and they're like, no thanks.
There is one question that everybody wants to know, though.
Hmm. Does it smell like coffee?
Does the watch smell of coffee?
Sure.
Okay. So.
No. It's shut up. Before the printing process and all this sort of stuff goes on, it's obviously completely sealed.
The resin.
Because it is still an organic, so it does need to be kind of contained.
Yeah.
And actually, the part of the original design brief when George and I started on this was to have it be using reclaimed coffee. So all those lines of sort of espresso pucks that get knocked out of the machine. We thought, we could use this because this is a waste product.
Yeah.
There's so much moisture in those that you would need to do an entire kiln firing, blah, 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 regrinding process. Right. That the amount of energy that you would be using would be like 500% more than just using new coffee. Yeah.
I think in the watch industry that is used to having watches created out of everything, including the unobtainium, which is a criterion I associate with you. The coffee watch was I think it was a little bit unfairly maligned. But as you say, hey, not everything's going to go to the top of the charts, is it? So,
a lot of people didn't get it, and that's perfectly fine. I think that's something that I really had a hard time coming to terms with. I mean, George Bamford had to talk me off the ledge a few times because everyone says, you know, everyone tells every actor when a movie comes out, don't read the reviews, don't read all the negative. Good luck. If you know that there's somebody calling you a dickhead in the newspaper, you're probably going to want to go see what's going on there. So we got, people.
Sophie has just hit on. There you go, man.
Sophie, you're going to burn your dinner and it's not going to be our fault. Okay. don't make me responsible for your happiness.
Mr. Rendler is under
exactly. It's going to be just smoke and flames. So, a lot of it is people do kind of love to hate on George just because, you know, like me, he's kind of an excessive personality, you know, and he kind of has a big shadow. So people love to just say, you know, oh, Bamford, oh, I hate Bamford. Bamford sucks. So like when the coffee watch came out, I was ready to just go buy a shotgun because I don't know if there was like a Facebook group or like a Reddit, you know, subreddit chat, but like within the first 20 minutes of the watch being posted, there was about 15 or 20 different comments that were word for word exactly the same. And they all said, oh, coffee, it's brown. Poo's brown also. Like this sort of Beavis and but there was like 30 comments about, hey, poo is brown. Bamford poo.
Yeah. Oh, here. Instagram. The joys of
Instagram. And I was such a crappy husband and father for a couple of days because I was just, you know, like my kid would go running past me on fire and I would be sitting there with my phone like, yeah, no, that's terrible. Oh, what? Who said?
Yeah. So what?
It's impossible not to take it personally. I'll actually go further and say, if you don't take it personally, it's not the job for you. I hope I get this pissed off 20, 30 years in the future if I'm still doing this.
Do you not think of it so? Because you're always going
to I'll be a raging, you know, maniac by that point. But
yeah, but you're always going to get critics, you know what I mean? And I think you got to roll with it sometimes. Sure. You know? So
if people don't complain, you know, if there's not really that much dialogue being created, then you've probably done something a little safe.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
George showed me when we released the Fortnite Watch, and these were huge success. We sold out 10 of them in like a week. And the first time we posted, the picture got like 300 likes and like 8 comments. We're like, yeah, the coffee watch got, you know, 500 likes, but like 180 comments. No, okay, there was a bunch of bad ones, but also it was just people just discussing. You know, it's almost, it's art. You know, is a painting of a blue square art?
Well,
know, there's always the people that are just going to say, oh, it's crap. You know, you guys are idiots, but...
Yeah, well, I tell you what.
Nobody is going to buy one of the watches, so, you know.
Look at that comment there. What does that guy know about dials? You know?
He's Swedish, and I tell you this, buddy. Swedes are, like, religious about coffee. Do not mess with coffee in this country, or they will cut your head off and throw you out of the boat.
Right. Well, do you know what we've done? Like, okay, so we've looked through about 3 or 4 watches so far.
I haven't shown you any of the. I got crap all over my table here.
We haven't even done any loom stuff yet. I've introduced you to the man who had fire coming out of his fingertips. Like, you know,
hold that thought.
You go there. There will be a short interlude while the Black Badger goes and turns out the lights. Oh, well, what's going to happen now? So.
It might have actually got too dark for me to do this, but we'll see if this works.
Do you need me to sing around that there while you're warming the thing up, or? What music do you listen to when you're?
I routinely get made fun of for my music choices, all the time.
I would find that.
My last studio that I had, I was sharing with a buddy, and he had a couple other sort of. You know, cool, super tattooed, kind of skateboardy people there, and they were always listening to like gangster rap and all this. And I would be like, just turning up like my, you know, Dean Martin a little bit, or some Perry Como, or you know, some just, yeah.
This is one of the most unusual interviews or conversations we've had because people watching will think that I am talking to myself, and some mad lights have just arrived out of the heavens, like.
So when I hold it up like this, is that kind of centered in the screen? Because on my side, on the screen.
Yeah, it is indeed. It is indeed. That's a bracelet, isn't it, or a ring?
That's a bracelet. Yeah. This one you might recognize a little bit.
Oh man! Right, I have images of that of that trio of Sarpanaves, and you know when I grow up. I want to have a Sarpaneva.
When I grow up, I want to be Stepan Sarpaneva.
Yeah, kind of.
me too, man.
And you're working with this is your actual where you rose to prominence, really, isn't it? In the watch game was by experimenting with. This is a HMX by MB and F.
Yes, sir.
We've had some great conversations over the last couple of weeks with Max Booser, with Stephen McDonald, and so this is actually behind.
And now you're sitting here with me drinking beers in the dark.
Yeah, obviously this is the craziest one we have for me doing it on my
actually,
own. For
a you know, start. What, actually on that but subject,
do a black square,
literally. The proudest moment of my career when we released the MB&F HMX at Baselworld in 2016, we had, you know, there was just this constant procession of photographers and all these people taking pictures of it. And I think it was like Bloomberg Wall Street Journal guys or something.
Yeah.
Hold it like that so you can see me.
Oh, there we are. Oh, Jesus, turn it off.
Yeah, you can see I've had my front teeth replaced.
You're lucky.
So we've got these... Wall Street Journal photographers, and I'm trying to show them the glowing watch, and there's all these big spotlights, so it's not glowing at all, and they're totally unimpressed. So finally, after about 10 minutes, I kind of go, all right, screw it, everybody under the table. So I drag these guys under the table, and I get out the little goofy flashlight, and we're all charging up the light and taking pictures and giggling. And this is like right as Max Boosser goes walking by the front door with, you know, his scarf and a cup of tea, and it's like sort of serious. And here's these four giggling idiots under the table with like a, you know, $200,000 worth of watches under the table. And the look, I remember it was just this kind of, why did we invite that guy?
But my part of it, I am fascinated by Loom. I make sure that my watch is charged whenever I put it on the bedside table at night.
All the time. So look at that.
This is the key fob, isn't it?
That's a pendant that I did with actually a really good friend of mine in the US, a guy named Pat Pruitt, who did the bracelet as well.
Yeah.
And he works with Milling Zerk, which is nothing I would ever want to do, because that is something that loves to burn your house down. Should I turn the lights back on? Like, can you see me at all? Or is it?
Do you know what? I know you're there, James. All the people watching might think, you know, what is this?
Here, hang on. We'll do a crazy loom picture, then I'll grow up here. Hang on a sec.
That's okay.
Especially because my mom said that she had to go, so she isn't watching anymore, so I can like swear and be stupid again and stuff.
That's okay. Back to normality.
In my 40s, and I still got to make sure I don't piss my mom off.
That's crazy. A bunch of brightness there, isn't it?
Yeah.
So this is all this is actually your day job primarily, isn't it? Like, if you go onto the Black Badger website, which I'm going to create a little banner for, it's primarily rings.
Yeah. The actual website, the web shop at blackbadger.se, buy now for Christmas delivery. I keep that mostly as a web shop.
Yeah.
Purely because it's a little slower now that I'm sort of working mostly with watches. But I would be putting out new designs like every 3 or 4 days, because I had a couple other Instagram-based ring makers, and we were always trying to one-up each other, and we were just killing ourselves, always trying to out-cool, you know, Silver Bear Studios or whatever, Louis, or some of these guys that I was pals with. We were always just... Yeah. So I had, it was so hard to actually introduce new products on the website all the time that I just basically just said, you know what, everything's on Instagram. If there's something you want, message me. Yeah, sure, we can do it. So my web shop is really dull, I'll say. And also, it doesn't have any of the watch stuff on it.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, thinking about like with the MB&F watches and De Batoon and stuff, it's not like I'm an authorized dealer. It's not like I'm selling these watches. Very much a dinner guest with these brands.
Yeah.
One sec. Actually, I'll show you one more thing, and I'll turn the lights back on. It just looks like I'm some kind of weird, like, live via satellite from, like...
Yeah, this is reporting from a war zone, waiting for this. Right.
From the disputed zone. So check this out.
That is the coolest damn thing.
This was... I got invited. I got invited to do a bottle topper for Patron Tequila, and they wanted to do a Black Badger edition, you know, one of their super elite artists, you know, like $5,000 a bottle series.
Yeah.
Now, again, pure professionalism. I met this guy at the MB&F launch at Basel, and I'm sitting next to Max. I'm trying to kind of be professional and intelligent and talking about the watch. And this guy out of nowhere goes, James, have you ever thought about doing a tequila bottle? And without thinking, my first response is, I go, oh, Christ, I hate tequila. And this is as the guy's handing me his business card. And he's chief of marketing for Patron. I'm like, oh, God. I'm such a moron, because I had gone on Mexico to holidays and I had bought the tequila you get at the gas station, and golly, you get a little sick from that. So this was meant to be a cactus piña, the heart of the cactus that you would actually make tequila from. And I'm pretty damn proud of it. I thought we were super good to go. It was going to be 3D printed ceramic and loom and all this kind of stuff, and it was going to be ridiculously top shelf.
It's brilliant.
And then Patron got bought by Bacardi. I think the Bacardi group. It was some like $3 billion deal. So they just kind of stopped responding to my emails when I was like, hey, guys, are we doing this? And they're like, just, you know, piss off.
So left you high and dry with your costs and your...
No. I got a little grumpy and I got a
bottle of tequila.
Big bag of money out of them. But more, it was kind of like how you were starting this conversation at the beginning, is that, you know, yeah, I got good pay for the development work on that, but I just wanted to go into a bar and say, that stuff in the top shelf, I did that. You know, because that's the stuff that I get excited about. I'm more excited about the fact that there's my goofy Black Badger logo on the back of that NBNF watch than the fact that I got paid.
Hang on,
I'm going to turn the lights back on here. It's looking a little bit.
I'll play some lift music while you're away, and so we will wait. Oh, God.
There you go. All right, you're stuck looking at me again.
Back on me. Welcome back, James. We were, man, you wouldn't believe what happened there.
That was my stunt double.
So listen, right, we're over the hour here. I know whenever I'm with Dan, I told you
that you're going to have to keep me on topic. I warned you. So if you have any specific questions, go.
Brilliant. I don't have any questions because we started doing questions at the start and never used any of them over 6 episodes. And eventually, after the Cory Vital Item one, where I had a page that long, and I didn't use any. So we just said, do you know something? This is more like a conversation that flows. We're having a bit of a chat over. So all the things that you've been involved in.
Yorn is going to kill me if I don't talk about the new Lindbergh Limb Blue Sea.
Don't you worry, my friend. That was a couple of little things I wanted to get looking at first.
Fire away.
You've already shown us your own version of that. Like, that is just astonishing. The collaboration with yourself and Stepan Sarpaneva, who resolutely refuses to come on and have a chat with us on In the Network. But
it's something about Finland. It's like when they interview Kimi Räikkönen, you know, like after, oh, you won the Monaco Grand Prix. How is it?
Yeah.
I got to go to the bathroom, and he just leaves or something.
Yeah, he famously did that already. I love Kimi, you know. I shouldn't love Kimi because he's an ignorant man, but he is what he is, you know. And hey, did you ever listen to Finnish music, for God's sake? Like, you know, it's a little wonder. So, you know.
That's a crazy language.
No, I've been listening to a lot of really...
Stepan, I would say probably more than, I hope I don't step on any toes, but more than anybody else in the industry, I think has been an absolute mentor. Because as far as the business side of things goes, I mean, you know, I had done a watch where I was very much a subcontractor and kind of under the table and, okay, I can make these little bits, right? This guy just fucking just opens his door and goes, yeah, come on in. Oh, here, let's figure something out. And he was so cool about it. And was also very cool about, I would almost say, kind of sharing the spotlight, because you know, I didn't have any notoriety and I didn't have any investment in this. I was basically just somebody who showed up for dinner and then kind of refused to leave. And he was so, and we've done 2 series of this watch. This is the Northern Lights with the moon phase indicator. And then we did the 4 seasons, the follow-up year. And, I mean, what a project. Because also, like, the first year that I went to Basel to, quote-unquote, work, I was kind of unofficially, you know, hanging around Stepan's end of the booth. Because we were doing a couple little, I was taking part in a couple little interviews, or he was introducing me to people. And so I'm sitting there in this crappy little exhibition booth, little side office thing at Basel, and looking at it now, it was me and Stepan Sarpaneva, it was Kari Vutalainen, it was the Grunefeld brothers, and Loop System, and I'm like, looking now, like, there's some big ass names in that group.
Yeah.
I mean, good Lord, how many GPHG awards are in that sort of group right there? How much iconic watchmaking? And I'm just like, just literally hanging out. So like Stepan's talking to like 12 journalists and Cotty on the other side has got like a film crew from China interviewing him. And I'm just like standing in the middle of the room with a beer. Like I'm in everyone's way at the same time. I'm always in the background of someone's shot. So I'm trying to move out of the way. It worked. And then Patrick would come by and drink all our beer. So
yeah, well, good company, man. You know, like you can't chase somebody who's good company, you know. So always welcome, always welcome.
And then I made the mistake of trying to go out to the pub with the Grunefeld brothers and Sarpaneva.
And yeah, that'll be interesting.
And actually, as Sophia just said, at that booth is where I met Fiona Kruger, who's my wife and I. She's one of our dearest friends. She's absolutely the nicest person on the planet. And I was reading a magazine article on the flight there, looking at this crazy cool skull watch. I'm like, oh, that's awesome, Fiona Kruger. And then, like, the next day, we're at this, having many, many, many beers at the Sarpaneva booth. This tiny little blonde Scottish lady comes up, and she goes, are you Black Badger? And I kind of... Yeah, she goes, oh, I'm Fiona Kruger. And I'm like, I totally fanboyed. I'm like, I was just reading about you. All these people had become lifelong friends. That's what I absolutely love about the independence side of thing is.
Well,
Fiona and Luke System, they're just
micro community, isn't it, really? But I hope to have Fiona on one of these days and with Saf and Dan to have a conversation. So, what else have you? Yes,
Lucy.
Two.
Yes.
This week, and this to the untrained eye would look like five different versions of similar of the same kind of watch. Yeah,
pretty much.
Is it, or what's going on here?
This is the new Lindverdelin Octopus Blue Sea. So what you're looking at is basically you're showing the progression of the loom. This guy's got it going on. On the left, you're looking at the way the dial would look in daylight. And then you're sort of seeing it in progressively darker exposure.
As the light fades. Is that how it works? Okay.
But here's what we did. Here's how unbelievably cool we are. It's not especially new or novel to have a loom highlights or loom dials. I mean, you know, bloody hell, everyone's doing that now. What we did was this watch actually has three different tones of blue spectrum loom. You've got the upper level, say the hands and the chapter ring are aqua loom.
Yep.
The numbers and that sort of skeletonized mid dial are ultramarine loom, slightly darker blue. And then the base plate on the bottom is violet, a brand new violet emitting loom. So we're not just talking about paint. These are materials that emit three different colors of light. And the effect we wanted to have is if you're standing on a dock or you're standing on a boat and you're looking down into the water, say into a reef, as the water gets deeper, right, you get sort of darker colors down there. So as you get deeper and darker into the watch, the colors get darker. We actually went a step further. So we developed from the ground up all three of these colors of loom in direct cooperation with Superluminova in Switzerland, where all three of these colors during the daytime have a common Pantone cool gray number 3 color to them.
Yes.
So in the daytime, the watch is really subtle, like very. See, this picture I really like because I've charged the hell out of the watch with my little UV torch.
Yeah.
But I'm in a room where the lights are still on. So normally that very light lilac color should be just very light gray. But these subtle kind of tones when you're in the half light, I just absolutely love.
Yeah, it's been, and as you say, so you have, is this the swatch from the same project then?
This picture.
Yeah.
This picture is, let me look. That is from actually Debatoon.
Okay.
That was developing the Blue Moon loom for Debatoon, which was actually where the developmental style for the Linverdelin loom came from. Except with Debatoon, we actually went kind of in a different direction, where we mixed together different colors of light emission to get a specific color of glow. So Debatoon didn't want screaming bright green. That would be okay for other brands, but you know, this is Debatoon. It's got to be that thermally oxidized titanium dark blue, right? So we actually mixed together two different colors, violet loom and ultramarine loom, in a very specific ratio so that it actually glowed two colors at the same time, which gave you the effect of this perfect dark blue with just a hint of purple. And that was the first time, according to Superluminova, who makes the stuff, that was the first time that's ever been done in the watch industry.
Wow. So we'll get back. I know that we'd love to have talked about Debatoon, but I think, Joe, this week the topic really is the Octopus.
I love this watch. I have.
So the hell do I?
And this picture is actually standing out in the fountain out in front of our apartment building where I live.
Wow.
Because it made for a good angle, but yeah.
Man. Do you know something? I've been a fan of Linda Verdelin since they first really appeared on the scene. And like, what were they like? These incredible graphics. And these, they had a wonderful concept for a small brand. And man, did they ever punch above their weight.
That's one of the things I really like, and I think it's a very Scandinavian thing. I mean, for instance, even our friend Patrick Quilgren has been popping up with some of the questions here.
Yeah,
I mean, we're talking about a bloody spectacular watchmaker, but kind of like with Sarpaneva, he'll never tell you that. You know, if it's somebody from North America like me, it sort of feels like they're always throwing their accolades in your face.
Yeah,
whereas. Patrick and Linverdelin and Stepan, they're so restrained and they're so quiet and they're so just bloody good at what they do.
Totally, yeah.
So Jorn Verdelin, who I've been working with, I mean, he's quiet. I can't tell you how much and how refreshing it is to talk to a quiet person. Because whenever I hear and I've just ruined my entire point here. Yeah.
Go ahead. Yes.
Well, because I'm so social and sort of hyper chatty, whenever I hear myself back, if I watch this later, I end up like I'm trying to sell you a used boat. You know, speaking to somebody who's shy, my wife is quite shy. I think it's the sweetest, most charming thing on the planet. Whereas somebody that can just kind of for 7 hours and, you know, it's obtuse and it's boring. So with Linverdelin, there's that kind of bleeds over a bit into their aesthetic. You know, like you can almost tell just from the lines and from looking at it that it's a Scandinavian product, because it's bold, it's clean, it's rather unadorned, and it just lets the materials do the talking.
Good analogy, yeah.
Those lines, and this is actually where this whole kind of funny Miami Vice vibe came from, was because originally we had talked about doing a carbon watch. One of their 3TP carbon, I think it's called.
Yeah.
And wasn't a huge fan of the watch. I'd already done a carbon watch with Schofield, and it didn't really vibe. It actually took us about 5 years to sort of get a project going. Hmm. And as soon as Jorn sent me a picture of this alloy Linverdelin case, I just instantly thought of a 1980s Lamborghini Countach. You know, that back end with all these angles. So actually, I think I just started sending him pictures of white Lamborghinis on some Sunday afternoon, and I could just hear Jorn just rolling his eyes like, oh, what the hell is this idiot doing? And then the color palette started coming out, that we wanted to have these purples and light grays and lilacs and aqua colors. So this sort of Miami Vice fashion reference thing, you know, started kind of coming back into it. So a friend of mine, Vale, who's a fantastic tattoo artist in town here, knocked up this very sort of Grand Theft Auto Vice City inspired picture of Jorn Verdelin and myself.
It's lovely.
I'm not going to lie. I love the hell out of this picture.
Absolutely.
And it's so bloody well done. It's so hilarious seeing Yorn as like a, a 80s Miami pimp or something.
Yeah.
And my buddy who has the studio directly beside where my new Badger Den is has like a large scale print company. Like they do like vinyl wraps for like all the hockey team buses and all these sort of things for malls. So I actually have this picture now in my studio as a 5 meter high banner.
No way.
It's 2.5 stories high. So it's like you walk in the front door of my studio and you've just got this 400% high picture of me as soon as you walk in. So like today the FedEx person came to pick up some packages and I was sitting at that chair in the picture and they kind of look at the picture, then look at me and the guy's like, "You are an idiot."
He was jealous, man.
It's
he
just
was
off, man. He it just
for his liver too. Don't be under any doubt, man. You know,
dumb stuff like that just makes me laugh. You know, it just because I'm by nature kind of a spaz, and I get really stressed out, and I get really grumpy on things. Just dumb crap like that just makes me laugh and every time I look at that thing. It's just this kind of.
It's fantastic. It's fantastic.
My neighbor's complaining because I keep playing the Miami Vice theme song like 25 times a day, really loud in the studio.
So I actually hope that we're going to have Yorn on as well. And
absolutely.
In conversation with Pietro on Monday there. And I watched him. He was part of the thing I was doing with Pietro, which is called The Imposters. Could you imagine that?
Because I'm on that tomorrow.
You're on with Pietro tomorrow on
here's a kick in the ass. I just had a message from Pietro like an hour ago. He's like, "Hey, I don't want to stress you out, but Jean-Claude Bivier is on right before you."
He was Jean-Claude Bivier.
Why you think you don't go on stage after Scorsese or something because you're just gonna look like an ass.
Do you know something, man? You don't. You never do. So,
but I'll just make sure I'm extra drunk for that tomorrow, and he'll never invite me back.
So, is there anything else that we wanted to have a little look at here before we went? Obviously, MBNF have been a big part of your career as well. So,
yes, very much so.
Yeah, both years of work out there, like, you know. And
I caused such a crap storm on Instagram when I posted this picture. Because people thought that I'd been at some steakhouse and I just threw like a $60,000 watch in the fire. It's the lobby of the hotel directly across from Basil Mussan. And it's like a vapor strip.
Yes.
So it's a long strip with just like steam coming out of it and they got LEDs under it. So I'd actually been borrowing one of Fiona Kruger's skull watches like to go out for dinner with.
Yeah.
I'll give back to you tomorrow. And I sent her back a picture of her watching the fire and she just lost her mind. I'm like, no, it's okay. It's okay.
Brilliant. Brilliant.
You don't want to piss off a little Scottish woman. They will cut you open.
Let me tell you. So there's one other thing I wanted to touch on too, but I think we'll come back to it again sometime when there is actual news, but it is Arkanaut.
Oh, I should have been talking about that before. Yeah.
Listen, we'll do it because let's wait until there's news and you come back, James, and talk to us about it whenever.
Absolutely will. And in fact, I'll bring back Anders Brandt with me.
Fantastic.
Arkanaut is a tiny little four-person Copenhagen-based watch company. It's four people because I'm one of the four people now.
Congratulations.
We're having so much fun with this brand because we're sort of trying to go against the really overt Scandinavian design aesthetic without being cliche about it.
Yeah.
And he's been over to visit me at the Badger Den a couple of times in the last few months, or as long as we're allowed to with COVID stuff.
Yeah.
And the last time we didn't talk for more than 10 minutes about watches the whole bloody weekend.
Yeah.
What we talked about most was chefs. The inspiration that comes from this new Nordic cuisine and like Jose Andreas and all these just insane experimental alchemy chefs couldn't care less about watchmaking. This is just doing something that is new and exciting and fresh and just being, you know, being inspired by the ingredients. I mean, have you ever heard Jamie Oliver talk about carrots? Holy crap. You know, he gets tears in his eyes.
Yeah.
This is so, I mean, we're being a little sort of goofy, but this is really what we're trying to do with this. So the way that Anders and I were kind of cooking this up was, God, I said cooking it up. Instead of trying to be, you know, we're not Swiss. We're not Swiss and we're not sorry. We're not trying to keep up with Geneva money. This isn't a Michelin-starred restaurant. This is the food truck around the corner, right? This is like a garage band is kind of what we're trying to do with it.
Brilliant. Yeah. Yeah.
This watch is 2,000 euros.
It's very cool.
Keep in mind, you know, I just finished working on a $100,000 De Batoon watch.
Yeah.
This is $2,000. That's interesting. That is actually kind of revolutionary to be doing it. But that, and also, in 2020, this is so much more appropriate and fashionable.
Yeah.
The world doesn't need $50,000 gold watches right now. Jesus Christ, yep. You don't need yellow Lamborghinis. This kind of stuff. This is really fun, and it feels quite authentic. If that obviously starts to sound kind of pretentious and self-serving, but so this is version one of the Arc One, all okay. Sold out. We're working on version two and version three, and I am cooking up some proper weird crap for the dial on version two.
I would imagine, and I really can't wait to see it there. So listen, let's come back and we can talk about it again sometime.
I'll bring Anderson. He'll up it huge.
What we want to do in the metal, one of the things we want to do is to provide a platform to showcase these new watches so that we can look at them in proper detail, take them apart by their creators and understand what's going on. And, you know, as you made a very, very valid point, though, about price. Today is the day, a few hours ago, Louis Erard and Vianney Alter have just unveiled a limited edition watch. I know I got a message a while ago. It is going like hot cakes, as you would expect. Usually you would pay house money for a Vianney Alter, anything with Vianney on it. 3,500 Swiss francs. It's, and you know what?
Well, there's me out of business.
Not just a signature piece. It's not something that has just been done like with Vianney's signature on the case back or anything. A beautiful little watch. You know
what that makes me think of? My absolute favorite watch of the year, and it's not because it's Loom, and it's not because it's made by my man in Finland. That Stepan Sarpaneva Moomin watch. Oh.
Yeah,
I love that watch so much that it just makes me sad that I didn't do it. It is so good. It's so well done. It's just
well, you know, that coming from you is quite a thing.
This is out of my league. This is shit. Absolutely. If I see one on the street, I will beat the crap out of that person and take it home and give it to my wife.
That's not very good of you, you know. So
I don't care. They're sold out, so
it's sold out as well. Yeah, and do you know what? It had its critics, like the coffee watch. It had
$5,000. I think there were 5,000 euros.
Yeah, yeah.
The two I did with Stepan were about 10,000 and 15,000 euros. This is his SUF, which is his kind of more production series based brand. So it's a very high end for SUF Sarpaneva, but it's.
It's beautiful. I'm going to tell you what's going to happen here in a few seconds because doing this old thing, it's a W page.
There you go. Don't show it because then nobody will ever want to see my stuff again. So I don't know how to do anything else. So please don't put me out of business.
Oh, man. It is definitely a thing of beauty. And, yeah.
And it's $5,000. $5,000 is a lot of money. But I'm sorry. I could pull up any, you know, sort of $30,000, $40,000 watch. Oh, that's beautiful. You pull up that one and everyone goes, oh.
But it is also. Show me that again. Yeah, it's also based on a cartoon character or a children's
a traditional Finnish kids series that my wife here and watched when she was growing up, and it's all over Scandinavia.
Yeah,
it's happy. This is something that I keep coming back to because I'm becoming more and more grumpy in my age. It's no just way. Joy. It's colorful. It's beautiful. It's happy. This is what I want to do more of. Like we discussed earlier, you and I don't think the kind of blacked out carbon Navy SEAL pilot, you know, Top Gun aesthetic is especially needed or appropriate right now because the world has enough grump as it is. But that multicolored bastard of a watch just makes me smile.
Well, here, I'll tell you what,
God, I wish I thought of it myself.
Amazingly, guess what?
There we go. Look at that. That's eight different colors of liquid superluminova hand applied to a laser cut dial that's got these little paper thin little reservoirs, little sort of, it's so good. It's so well done.
Yeah. It's amazing. It's amazing.
Fuck that guy.
it struck me as stained glass.
Yeah.
It's like stained glass. And obviously triumph.
The Rose window in Notre Dame. It's just.
Or Chartres Cathedral or something like that. Do you know something, man? Very magnanimous of you to even talk about that one on this.
I'm a half-blind monkey compared to that thing. It's so good. It's so good.
Yeah.
But it's also, it's on brand. This is what's so cool. It's a spectacular piece, but it has that sort of finish innocence and joy and kind of mysticism to it. If it would have come from an Italian brand, I don't think it would have had the same impact.
No.
But because it comes from Tove Jensen, exactly.
Yeah.
Because it comes from a place where darkness, like it's bloody dark out here now, Scandinavia this part of the year, darkness is such a big part of the country and it's such a big part of the personality. Especially when you get further north from here. I mean, this is a lot of what Stefan and I talked about when our pieces first came out, that we kind of interact with the dark parts of the year different than if you live in Vancouver, you know, where I grew up.
Yeah.
So that was really, really fun to have this kind of bit of mysticism, but in a very joyful, innocent way.
Brilliant. As far as I'm concerned, Stefan could do no wrong. He's nailed it, and that's why he is.
Stefan is the devil, and he must be stopped.
Yeah. Well, do you know what? We have hit over the hour and a half mark, and I really appreciate you staying on. And actual fact, whenever I wrap up here, just stay on for another few seconds after we've ended, because I want to tell you to F off properly. And,
okay. I've got that much left, so.
So, I'm out of beer too. Yeah. So, but listen, folks.
You're Irish.
I know, we'll have to go fix that. All the pubs are closed. Jesus.
Oh, God. Christ,
oh, God. What are we going to do with
it? Jesus, Mary and Joseph.
That's appropriation there, mate.
That's how you get punched in the face in Ireland.
But listen, I want to really thank, right, we've had tonight.
Thank you, man, very much.
People, this has been Mr. James Thompson, the Black Badger, whose work is just, it's instantly recognizable. We only got touching on some of it. There's more in the that's been done before, and there's more that's coming ahead. And
almost as good as Stefan's work.
Yeah. And so it's not, do you know what, man? It's one makes the other work as well, you know? So yeah. I think it's one complements the other. So, folks, for those who have sat and listened to us for the last hour and a half, thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Next week we'll be back with the irrepressible Dan Spitz, who will be kicking me and saying, "You fucking do this show without me, man!" And I'm really sorry about the poor quality tonight, but normal service will be resumed again next week. And but thanks so much for everyone for tuning in, and we will catch up with you next week.
Okay.